No, brothers and sisters, it is really that sincerity and it's that piety that we perform this task with. Another extreme, by the way, just to give you a flip side, is that sometimes people feel that they're doing something small for pleasing Allah and they do not maximize their potential. This is not what is meant here. We need to maximize our potential, do the best we can, but for the sake of Allah. So remember this lesson of the day, that a good deed is never small in the court of Allah. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. The harassing policies that Israeli regime applies against newly freed Palestinian prisoners vary according to the prisoners' home regions and positions. In the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank, prisoners are sometimes released at dawn or midnight to ensure families and friends cannot immediately greet and celebrate with the newly freed Palestinians. We prepare for you an article written by Wafa Al-Udaini, a Palestinian journalist based in the Gaza Strip, under the heading, Israeli Occupation Authorities Ban Celebration for New Freed Palestinian Detainees. Please stay with us for more of Wafa Al-Udaini's article. The Day of Freedom from Prison is a special day for Palestinian political prisoners and their families. It is considered a national day where celebrations are held and fireworks launched. Yet, according to Israeli laws against Palestinians, free prisoners of Al-Quds are not allowed to hold any kind of celebration, whether in their neighborhood or in their own homes. Furthermore, freed prisoners are often rearrested by the occupation police to sign pledges to not hold any celebrations, ceremonies, and even not to raise the Palestinian flag. They are also not allowed to receive guests who wish to congratulate them on their release from prison. On Tuesday, 30th of March, the Zionist regime's occupation forces stormed the home of Majd Barbar, former Palestinian political prisoner released after 20 years of detention, one day earlier. They kidnapped him and attacked family members and friends who were present in his home in the Ra's al-Amud neighborhood of occupied Al-Quds. Majd al-Barba was released again after one day of detention, but under several conditions, including pledging not to hold celebration events, not to raise the Palestinian flag, not launching fireworks, and to pay a financial guarantee of 1,000 shekels. Majd Barba is a father of two and has been detained by the Israeli occupation forces since 2001. On the day of his release from prison, his family, friends and neighbors of his Al-Quds neighborhood welcomed him grandly. Several touching videos of this welcoming back reunion featured Majd Barba with his loved ones went viral on social media sites. Zaina, 20-year-old daughter of Majd Barba, said, "The occupation always tries to snatch any joy and happiness from our hearts. It's really unfair. The moment of my father's freedom is so significant in our lives. Israel took him away from me since I was 15 days old." Ali al-Maghrabi, a spokesperson for the ASRA Information Office, said this is a familiar pattern with Palestinian political prisoners held in Israeli military prisons. Al-Maghrabi stated, when they end their sentence, they are rearrested. This Israeli policy is mostly used in occupied al-Quds. Some former prisoners have been forcibly deported from their hometown for days, whilst others have been prohibited from celebrating or participating in any political or peaceful events. He added, the occupation aims at keeping Palestinians of al-Quds in states of pain, frustration and sadness. It doesn't want them to connect with their Palestinian identity. For al-Quds former prisoners, the Israeli authorities re-detained many of them as they walked out of prison after serving long years. Amjad Abu Asab, head of the Committee of Families of Prisoners from al-Quds, said they were kidnapped and re-detained by Zionist regime forces and then re-released under restricted conditions by signing pledges to not celebrate or participate in any political or peaceful event. Ali al-Maghrabi stated in an interview, such celebrations are considered as one of the popular resistance methods, so the occupation tries to stop them and kill any spirit of resistance or patriotism. The total number of Palestinians held in Israeli prisons today is nearly 5,000, of whom 450 remain in administrative detention. Over 500 Palestinian prisoners, including women and children, are from Al-Quds alone. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Club, the Israelis follow this policy in order to keep Palestinians in occupied Al-Quds oppressed and disappointed so that no one can see the prisoner as a hero. Ali al-Maghrabi, the spokesman for ASRA Information Office, explained, the Israeli policy of no celebration is nothing new. All the Israeli policies used against the prisoners are totally racist. They want to bury the Palestinian identity from the residents of Al-Quds to show that the old city is completely Jewish. He added that this policy is not implemented on the Israelis. The Israelis also use another policy to oppress and harass newly freed Palestinian prisoners of al-Quds by deporting them to another city. Such a gross injustice happened to Wasim al-Jalad a year ago. Wasim al-Jalad, a 42-year-old Palestinian from al-Quds, was re-detained and transferred to al-Muskabiyah police station immediately after he had been freed from a 15-year prison sentence. Wasim al-Jalad was a new groom when he was arrested by the Israeli occupation forces. While the latter raided his home to rearrest him, he was holding his wedding ceremony and they dragged him this way out of his home. He was accused of participating in anti-occupation military operations. His family planned to hold his wedding ceremony again after finishing his prison sentence, but the Israeli authorities forced him to cancel his wedding ceremonies and not to celebrate his release, nor to attend any gatherings as a condition of his re-release. They also deported him from Al-Quds for 2 weeks and compelled him to pay a financial guarantee of $1,400 and another unpaid amount of $25,000. He was released one day after the expected day on July 2019. His mother said in pain that they waited for this day. The harassing policies that Israel applies against newly freed Palestinian prisoners vary according to the prisoners' home regions and positions. Since the Israeli occupation forces fully control the occupied city of Al-Quds, they have completely banned celebrations there. In the Gaza Strip and in the occupied West Bank, prisoners are sometimes released at dawn or midnight to ensure families and friends cannot immediately greet and celebrate with the newly freed Palestinians. In cases where the detention of Palestinian political prisoners had grabbed media attention, like for teenager Ahed Tamimi, long hunger striker Khaled Adnan, and journalist Mohammed Al-Ghiq, the Israeli authorities apply yet again different post-release policies. Several human rights organizations demand that Israel stops these sadistic and harassing policies of freed Palestinian political prisoners. Moreover, more than 550 international human rights organizations have jointly called upon the United Nations Human Rights Council to recognize and denounce the Israeli regime's racist policies against the entire Palestinian population, which include home demolitions and violation of the right of Palestinians to self-determination. The organizations, in a letter published recently, urged the United Nations to form an independent fact-finding mission and investigate the Tel Aviv regime's colonial and apartheid practices, in addition to its associated systematic policies. They stress that Israel's culture of impunity has further allowed business enterprises to benefit from the prolonged Israeli occupation and the perpetration of gross human rights violations against Palestinians. The signatories urged the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights to further develop, in a transparent manner, the United Nations database on business enterprises involved in Israel's illegal settlement expansion activities. They also called on the international community to utilize all available mechanisms to obtain justice and accountability for the Palestinians, to intervene immediately and slap economic sanctions against the Israeli regime, and hold individuals who may have committed war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories to account. The human rights organizations finally urged member states of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, ICC, to publicly support and fully cooperate with the Office of the Prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, ICC, to ensure the arrest and trial of individuals investigated and found guilty of international crimes at The Hague, and prevent the continued perpetration of crimes against Palestinians. The Israeli regime has received a letter from the International Criminal Court, ICC, at The Hague, Netherlands, formally detailing the scope of its war crimes investigation in the occupied Palestinian territories. The Israeli Channel 13 television network said the letter was sent recently and has requested the Tel Aviv regime to respond to it within 30 days. The report added that Israel's so-called National Security Council has already met to formulate an official response. It noted that the letter covers three main topics: the 2014 Israeli military onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip, Israeli settlement policy in the occupied territories, and the 2018 Great March of Return protests in the Gaza Strip, along the fence separating the territory from the occupied lands that led to Israel's martyring of dozens of innocent Palestinians. Earlier this month, the International Criminal Court, the ICC's chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, announced in a statement the launch of war crimes investigation into the Palestinian territories, which have been under Israeli occupation since 1967. Fatou Bensouda said her inquiry will be conducted independently, impartially, and objectively, without fear or favor. The Palestinian Authority welcomed the ICC prosecutor's announcement. The Palestinian Authority Foreign Ministry said in a statement, "It is a long-awaited step that serves Palestinians' tireless pursuit of justice and accountability, which are indispensable pillars of the peace the Palestinian people seek and deserve." The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, also praised the International Criminal Court, ICC's move.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program The Ocean of Dua. During this month of Sha'ban, the month of Almighty Allah's mercy and pleasure, we will try to offer a glance into some of the passages of the whisper prayer of Sha'baniya, or the so-called Munajat Sha'baniya. Thank you in advance for staying with us. We'll be back again after listening to some parts of it.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad ilahi. إن حرمتني فمن ذا الذي يرزقني وإن خذلتني فمن ذا الذي ينصرني إلهي أعوذ بك غضبك وحلول سخطك.
Brothers and sisters, we were talking about this excerpt. إلهي إن حرمتني فمن ذا الذي يرزقني وإن خذلتني فمن ذا الذي ينصرني. O my Lord, if you deprive me, who else will provide me? Who else can sustain me? وَإِنْ خَذَلْتَنِي فَمَنْ ذَا الَّذِي يَنْصُرَنِي. And if you disregard me, then who can help me? If you let me down, I have no one else to turn to. So the servant is actually saying, O Allah, if you deprive me, if you disregard me in any way, then who can provide me what I need? I am here standing before you with all these needs, and I know that sustenance from you can only be achieved through you. We said in the previous program that sustenance from Allah can be of many types. It can be physical, it can be spiritual, it can be psychological, it can be to do with health, progress, food, medicine, water, knowledge, and wisdom. They are all of different kinds. Sustenance is anything that contributes to our success, anything that we need in our own way to salvation. In this passage, we recognize that only He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is the giver of the sustenance. Furthermore, the prayer states that if Allah forsakes someone, then none else can help. No one would dare to interfere, and none has the power to enact any change. When a powerful ruler, for example, decrees that a person should not be helped under any circumstance, then others would not dare to come and help. And this is one part of the recognition that is one of the most fundamental aspects, one of the most fundamental prerequisites of starting to supplicate. Knowing that Almighty Allah is the absolute cause, we should recognize that there is no other one that has independent power and can come and help once He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, has decided that a person cannot be helped. So the angels, the prophets, the infallible imams, no one can help us if Allah has decided not to help us. But the point here is that the servant has started calling out unto his Lord at such a time.
We have been given the blessed opportunity of witnessing another month of Sha'ban, which is the month of Allah's mercy and pleasure. Hafaftahu bir rahmati wa ridwan. Allah has covered this month with His pleasure and mercy. I thought it might be good to have a little introduction to Munajat Sha'baniyya. The late Imam Khomeini in many places on several occasions emphasized on this Munajat, and in one of his sayings he said that there are many important mystical points that one can understand from the Quran and whispered prayers of Imams. And then in particular, he mentioned Munajat Sha'baniyya, and he said philosophers, mystics may be able to understand some aspects of these whispered prayers. But if someone wants to really understand, must be a person who has himself achieved a high level of closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so that he can have a taste, can have an experience of what he says. In another place, the late Imam Khomeini said something very important. He said, this Munajat Sha'baniyya is one of the whispered prayers that if someone pays attention to it and follows it and reflects on it, he can reach somewhere. He can achieve some levels of perfection. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this month of forgiveness and to be pleased with us in this month of pleasure. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless us, our families, our community, all humanity with His pleasure, with His reward, with the coming of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, with forgiveness, with being able to remain always on the right path.
This munajat, this whispered prayer, can be read and recited anytime during the year. But during the month of Sha'ban, during this time that Almighty Allah's mercy descends on the people, the doors of the Almighty Allah's mercy are open toward the earth, calling out to the Lord with such words can actually attract Almighty Allah's mercy. But as previously said, we should know that the ways of our salvation and destruction are actually within Almighty Allah's power. So we may not pray to Allah for something in which there is our own perdition. Sometimes we think that our salvation lies in something while our perdition is actually in it. In the Holy Quran, in the 11th verse of chapter Isra, it says, وَيَدْعُ الْإِنسَانُ بِالشَّرِّ دُعَاءَهُ بِالْخَيْرِ وَكَانَ الْإِنسَانُ عَجُولًا. Man prays for ill as avidly as he prays for good, and man is over hasty. And dear listeners, you can see that from the beginning of this beautiful whispered prayer of Sha'baniya, Imam Ali alayhi salam is actually confessing. He has not yet asked for something. One of the etiquettes of true supplication is recognition, and after that, the confession that we know you know. We know we are nothing, that we have no one else to turn to, and he has not yet asked for something. And this is mainly due to the fact that the one who is reciting is having a true knowledge, true recognition of whom he is standing before. And throughout our Islamic narrations, we have been ordered that it's better to ask for something which is good to us, something that will lead us to salvation, not specific things. Although we rely on Allah for even the smallest and specific things, we'd better to ask for general things in our supplications. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Shaban ib jamalek jalalek zahawban, wal'alam yigillek ahibbek ya Shaban. شعبان بجمالك جلالك زغوبان
شعبان بجمالك جلالك زغوبان والعالم يقلك أحبك يا شعبان
والعالم يقلك يا حبيب
شعبان بجمالك
شعبان أحبك يا شعبان يا شعبان أحبك يا شعبان.
Shortly after taking office as South Vietnam's president in 1955, pro-American Ngo Dinh Diem began a crackdown on suspected members of the Viet Minh Communist Coalition of the North. The Cold War was in full swing, and the United States, which was concerned about a rise in communism, gradually ramped up its military presence in Vietnam. Washington finally found the excuse to justify a war in the region following an incident in the Gulf of Tonkin in 1963 when two U.S. destroyers were targeted by a torpedo attack by the North Vietnamese forces. The U.S. Congress then approved the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which authorized U.S. military action in the region. The conflict that ensued has been regarded as one of the bloodiest wars the U.S. has ever been involved in. American troops resorted to using warfares, including napalm and chemical toxins, to confront their enemy. Perhaps the most notorious was a chemical substance called Agent Orange that was used during Operation Ranch Hand to defoliate jungles to uncover Vietnamese troops and destroy crops between 1961 and 1971. The substance contained dioxin, which is one of the most toxic chemicals known to man and has been linked to severe birth defects, cancers, and mental and physical disabilities.
I mean, this is, you have to understand that America has a different standard for the rest of the world than it does at home. At home, America adheres to fairly high level standards when it comes to herbicides, for example, of which Agent Orange is one. But when it comes to the poor nations of the world, such as Laos or Cambodia, a completely different standard applies.
the U.S. failure in the war and its atrocities in terms of the number of civilian deaths and the use of chemical weapons has tarnished America's image at home and abroad to date. The U.S. rained down some 600,000 gallons of herbicides on the neutral nation of Laos and roughly 19 million gallons of such chemicals in Vietnam. The chemicals were so potent that even American troops got a taste of their detrimental effects. After 14 years of legal dispute, the U.S. Congress passed the Orange Agent Act in 1991 to compensate American veterans of the Vietnam War who were exposed to the toxin. But it wasn't until the year 2000 that Washington started to admit responsibility for what the people of Vietnam and Laos have been going through. Washington kicked off a 10-year project to decontaminate swathes of Vietnamese land from the herbicide in 2019, but stopped short of awarding compensation to the families of the victims. There's also no mention of U.S. chemical attacks on neutral Laos during the war. Even after the American military acknowledged the attacks, a former American commander denied all knowledge about the use of dioxin there.
The Laos was a country that was caught in the middle of the Indo-Chinese War. The U.S. Was absolutely indiscriminate in its use of Agent Orange and other weapons of war against the population. It never apologized. It never had any second thoughts. As far as U.S. was concerned, it was just a collateral damage. So the U.S. has never made good on that. It's never made good on the enormous damage that was done to Cambodia, or certainly the incredible bloodshed that was imposed on Vietnam.
The Vietnam War ended long ago, but not for thousands of people living in Vietnam and Laos who are still being haunted by its effects.
The annual United States Report on Global Human Rights Practices looked at human rights issues in Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza as part of its global analysis on almost 200 nations. In the first such report of the Biden administration, the U.S. reaffirmed the recognition of Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights and the recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. That is while Washington has refused to slam the Israeli regime for its illegal occupation of the Palestinian territories as well as other crimes. More than 600,000 Israelis live in over 230 illegal settlements built since the 1967 Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories of the West Bank and East Jerusalem outlets. That is why the UN Security Council has repeatedly condemned Israel's settlement activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. Also, according to human rights groups, acts of violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians and their property are a daily occurrence throughout the occupied West Bank. Additionally, Israel holds more than 7,000 Palestinians in its jails. Most of the prisoners are being held with no indictments or trial under a controversial policy known as administrative detention.
Well, in the first place, the U.S. lacks the moral authority to talk about human rights in any country outside of its own boundaries. Inside the U.S., there is systemic racism against people of color and against people of indigenous origin. And this has been going on for 400 years inside what is now the United States. Their record has been terrible. And to just a couple of days ago, the trial of the police man who killed George Floyd is taking place. So the U.S. has no moral authority whatsoever.
The Israeli regime's crimes seem to have no end, and the international community only condemns the regime's atrocities in words. This is while Israel is violating international law. The Golan Heights were part of Syria until 1967. When the Israeli regime captured most of the area during the Six-Day War. In 1973, Egypt and Syria launched a war against the Israeli regime in an effort to recapture the occupied territories. However, with Washington's help, Israel managed to retain control over the territory it occupied before. Then in 1981, Israel declared its unilaterally annexing East Jerusalem and the Golan Heights in order to extend its own boundaries to cover the captured territories. In response, the UN Security Council passed Resolution 497 and condemned the annexation of Syrian territory. The Council declared the annexation a violation of international law. Meanwhile, Syria has repeatedly reaffirmed its sovereignty over the Golan Heights, saying the territory must be completely restored to its control. The Golan Heights territory is strategically important due to its military value. It is also a strategic asset due to its water resources and fertile land. In a relatively parched region of the world, control over the Golan's water supplies is invaluable. The Golan Heights may also have oil. Exploratory drilling suggests that the territory's reservoirs could potentially yield billions of barrels of oil. The annual United States report on global human rights practices also reaffirmed Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, which the U.S. recognized in 2019. In March 2019, the former U.S. President Donald Trump signed a decree recognizing Israeli sovereignty over Golan during a meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington. The Syrian government denounced Washington's recognition of Israeli claims over the Golan Heights as a blatant attack on the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Over the past decades, Israel has built dozens of settlements in the Golan Heights in defiance of international calls for the regime to stop its illegal construction activities.
Indeed, they are illegal, and nothing that the U.S. says or does can turn a crime into a legal act. Except for the USA, the entire world recognizes that the Golan Heights are part of the sovereign territory of Syria, and someday Syria will regain control of the Golan Heights.
The trial of former U.S. police officer Derek Chauvin began earlier this week. Chauvin is accused of killing 46-year-old African-American George Floyd by kneeling on his neck for more than 9 minutes during an arrest last May. Floyd's death triggered worldwide protests over brutal policing tactics and racial injustice. Prosecutors have said the former Minneapolis officer killed Floyd without regard for his life. They insist Chauvin betrayed his badge by kneeling on Floyd's neck and using excessive and unreasonable force as the black man kept begging for his life.
So you'd want to get him up out of
the high-profile trial is expected to take 1 month. During the next few weeks, prosecutors will ask medical and use of force experts, among others, to testify. If convicted of murder and manslaughter charges, the former police officer could be jailed for decades. Chauvin has denied the charges. His defense lawyers argue that the force used during the arrest was reasonable and that Floyd died of an overdose and poor health. U.S. police officers who cause a death while they're on duty are rarely charged, and only about a third of those charged are convicted. This ongoing trial is followed across the U.S. and around the world as a strong indication of how the American legal system treats deaths in police custody. The ongoing trial has captured media attention in the U.S. and around the world. Everyone wants to know how the proceedings will end. But there is still a strong possibility that justice will not be served in Floyd's case, just as it wasn't served in many other high-profile police killings of unarmed African Americans over the past years. The 2014 police killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson was another example in which the white officer who shot the black man was not indicted. Black Americans are disproportionately more likely to be fatally shot by police and arrested for drug abuse, and 5 times more likely than white Americans to be imprisoned. Experts believe ethnic minorities in America, especially African Americans, are facing a very deep-rooted problem that will not be resolved anytime soon.
Black people in the United States are incarcerated, jailed, locked up, arrested more than any other race at more than any other rate in this country, disproportionate to their percentage of the population. Even though black people in the United States represent just over 13% of the population, they're targeted and they're victimized more to the prison industrial complex more than any other group in the United States. And that's something that we really have to begin to tackle in the United States to understand the roots of the prison industrial complex, of the police as catchers of enslaved people.
Observers largely attribute this trend to the racist roots of American policing and social structures. Law enforcement in many U.S. states, especially those in the south of the United States, have their roots in slave patrols that were formed centuries ago. Such patrols located and forcefully returned enslaved people who had escaped.
The first reason for police to begin with to exist in the United States were to catch enslaved people who liberated themselves from their owners who fled to the north. And that's why you'll see the first badges of the police from the 1800s said the words slave patrol, because that was one of their first jobs, to catch liberated enslaved peoples who were running to the north for freedom, for economic opportunity. That's the roots of policing in the United States, and we have to contend with that in order to deal with this.
The federal government banned the use of racist regulations at the state and local level many decades ago. Yet, ethnic minorities are subject to discrimination and profiling. Former U.S. President Donald Trump gained notoriety for fueling racial tensions and discrimination through provocative comments and stances. His successor, Joe Biden, has been an outspoken critic of racial injustice. But it remains to be seen whether he can truly lead the U.S. towards a less racially discriminative future.
Iran and China have signed a cooperation pact dubbed the Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. The deal was signed by the foreign ministers of the two countries in Tehran. The agreement includes political, strategic, and economic cooperation over the next 25 years. The pact would see Iran supply China with oil for 25 years. In return, China would invest in Iran's ports as well as its banking and telecom sectors. The pact has been in works since 2016 when President Xi Jinping became the first Chinese leader to visit the Iranian capital in over a decade. Many believe that the Iran-China agreement is aimed at standing up against U.S. pressure on the two countries.
Apart from this bilateral perspective, I think this signed agreement could be considered as a response, in a sense, in order to broaden the scope of the options that Iran has in its foreign policy. Knowing the fact that Iran has been practicing negotiations with the Western side, and then after all these years, and after JCPOA was signed and sealed, and later on was kind of not effective for Iranian signatory of the deal, now there is this consensus among Iranian politicians that they should broaden the scope of their international relations, and obviously China is going to be one of the most powerful options to be taken into consideration.
The agreement drew an outright reaction from Washington.
How concerning is the emerging partnership between China and Iran?
I've been concerned about that for a year.
Biden made the remarks in an address to reporters in the U.S. city of Wilmington. In response, Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, said the signing of the Iran and China Strategic Partnership Roadmap is part of the active resistance policy. Shamkhani said the world isn't just the West, noting, however, that Biden's concern is justified as a flourishing of strategic cooperation in the East will accelerate the U.S. decline.
Well, I think the agreement that we are currently discussing could kind of pave the way for the U.S. hegemony to be broken, at least in Asia. And this is quite against the strategies that the United States is following in order to, increase its hegemonic power, specifically in Asia and particularly in the Middle East. So this particular framework could kind of let's say, put the United States in a rather isolated situation and could, of course, put China and Iran in a better situation.
Iran's closer cooperation with China on one hand can help Tehran shore up its economy against the impacts of the U.S. sanctions. On the other hand, the Tehran-Beijing alliance may be seen as a challenge to President Biden's China policy. This as the two major economic powers have been at odds over a string of issues, including trade, with each side having imposed tariffs worth of hundreds of billions of dollars on other side's goods. This stalemate has prompted China to increase its imports of Iranian oil to around 1 million barrels a day, eroding U.S. leverage. Many believe that China's new partnership with Iran is not a full alliance, but enough to undermine U.S. sanctions and rock the global status quo.
Whether we call it a strategic partnership or alliance or whatever you name it, the thing is that the very tangible consequence of this, let's say, new deal is that the world has to come to this realization that the calculations are, let's say, rapidly changing. And in this recent situation, the United States and its Western partners are not going to be able to consider themselves as the only powers and as the only superpowers of the world with respect to the new emerging powers and with respect to great economic powers that are emerging in Asia. And this is going to definitely change the context, not only in the Middle East and not only in Asia, but also all over the world, and new line of calculations are going to be met for the years down the road.
This as Washington has expressed eagerness to enter stalled talks with Tehran to revive the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Former U.S. President Donald Trump pulled out Washington from the agreement, claiming Tehran violated it. This as the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, has on multiple occasions reiterated Tehran's full compliance with the international accord. The Trump administration went even further by imposing a signature maximum pressure campaign against the Islamic Republic. All in all, it seems that Iran and China can establish an economic bloc if Tehran-Beijing Comprehensive Partnership Agreement expands to other countries in Asia and through that confront the U.S. unilateralism.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Light. A baby capybara has found a new family at a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali after she was abandoned by her mother soon after birth last December. The little capybara is 3 months old and is under the care of a surrogate mother who is in charge of providing her with the skills she needs for optimal development. The baby capybara was rejected shortly after birth by her first-time parents. But the zoo hopes that in a couple of months, she will be able to unite with another female of the same species.
As the COVID-19 pandemic has affected most sectors in one way or another, the Swiss tech firm has created a robot that can disinfect airplanes in a few minutes. The startup called Uvea says the robot emits powerful ultraviolet lights as it slowly moves down the aisle, killing 99% of bacteria and pathogens, including the coronavirus. The company says a robot can disinfect a single aisle in 13 minutes. The startup co-founder says the UVC technology has been used for decades in hospitals and labs. He says the fact that the rays could be harmful to humans prompted them to seek an autonomous robot that can carry out the task.
It's quite an old technology, but it's quite dangerous. That's why we want to take the worker out of the range of the light. So that's why we made a robot, because there is some solution when you are near the light, and that's dangerous. So we really had to make this system autonomous. So we switch it on, we leave, the machine makes the disinfection, all the plane, all around, and then it stops automatically. So the worker are not in contact with the machine.
The company is hopeful that technology could help restore travelers' confidence in safe air travel and help bring the worst-hit aviation sector back to its feet.
Now, in Egypt, more than 20 ancient royal mummies have been paraded to a new museum to be displayed in Greater Spelda. The mummies include 18 kings and 4 queens who were taken from the Egyptian Museum in central Cairo's Tahrir Square. They were transferred to the National Museum of Egyptian Civilization in Fostat, which lies some 5 kilometers to the southeast of the capital. The ceremony aimed to drum up interest in Egypt's rich collections of antiquities at a time when tourism has entirely stalled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Archaeologists discovered the mummies in 2 batches at a complex of mortuary temples of Deir al-Bahari, located on the west bank of Nile. High-tech light displays at the Beijing International Light Festival provide an immersive experience to visitors and create a miraculous night scene by illuminating the sky. The festival is held in a major urban park in the Chinese capital, Beijing, also a popular site for enjoying cherry blossoms in the spring. As the sun goes down, the park is illuminated with a high-tech light show every evening, and nature's beauty is heightened, that is highlighted, with a little help from technology.
The theme of our show this year is Blue Space. We've created a universe in which there is the blue planet. The visitors come in as explorers from Earth, they board the spacecraft, and it takes them to the blue planet. And the installations they see in the park are different biolandscapes on planet blue. There, they need to complete several tasks, which are the interactive installations we've set up. So the exhibition is immersive and interactive.
The exhibition uses 19 different types of lighting equipment to give visitors an unforgettable experience. This is the second year for the Beijing International Light Festival and will last until October 2021.
Painting eggs is a beloved tradition amongst Christians, especially Orthodox, on the occasion of Easter, symbolizing the resurrection of Jesus Christ. A veteran Hungarian artist has taken that craft to a whole new level. 67-year-old Tunde Chuhai has been designing eggs for decades. Each of her delicate creations takes days to make. Chuhai uses various kinds of eggs and says the best one comes from geese. She starts her craft by emptying the eggs through tiny pinholes before washing and then drawing patterns on them. The veteran egg designer says her style is so unique that she doesn't have to sign her eggs.
I never sign my eggs, as everyone knows they were done by me. I don't have to particularly prove that I did it because my style is so distinctive, even though others may use similar techniques.
Chuhai's decorative Easter eggs are very popular, so she has to work all year round to meet the demands. Her work is internationally recognized and has featured in galleries both at home and abroad. This year, however, her miniature creations have to stay at home with her due to the coronavirus pandemic. A young British man who is no stranger to danger takes his life in his hands, free climbing one of the highest skyscrapers in Europe. George King made his way to the top of a 116-meter hotel in the Spanish city of Barcelona without any ropes or safety measures. The 21-year-old scaled the building in only about 20 minutes. However, as he was climbing down the building, he was arrested by police. This is not the first time the British daredevil has risked his life with such a nail-biting climb. Last December, he scaled Barcelona's iconic Agbar Tower with a height of 144 meters. In 2019, he also free climbed the 310-meter Shard building in London. The feat, however, earned him 6 months in a young offenders center.
A chocolate maker in the Belgian city of Bruges has come up with a novel recipe to boost business in the run-up to Easter.
When you're a classic chocolate maker, make very classic recipes. Caramels, praline, marzipan, and it's okay. We have classic bonbons too. But I think today, the customer wants to go on adventure, also when they are eating something.
The chocolatier's special concoction is a praline made of grass juice, Granny Smith apples, and an East Asian type of lemon. He believes chocolate contains a secret ingredient that can counter the lockdown gloom. Belgium is known as the chocolate capital of the world. The northern city of Bruges is in particular renowned for treating your taste buds to quality cocoa. However, the coronavirus pandemic has diminished foreign tourist numbers, with businesses now relying on local customers. This is heart-melting. A video of a stray cat carrying her sick newborn kitten to a veterinary clinic in Turkey is melting hearts online. Veterinarians were confused as a cat walked into their clinic clutching one of her kittens in her mouth. The cat then meowed for a long time and brought in a second kitten of hers. After a quick examination, the vets noticed that the kittens couldn't open their eyes due to an eye infection. The clinic staff immediately treated the animals, helping them open their eyes after a while. The stray feline and her kittens were placed in adoption after the completion of their treatment. Nothing marks the start of spring in Japan like cherry blossoms. This year, people try to enjoy the sakura season safely by observing health protocols. Scores of Japanese have flocked to Tokyo's Ueno Park and along the Magura River to see stunning cherry trees in full bloom. The light pink flowers symbolize fresh starts in Japanese culture. The cherry blossoms generally last from April to May. Thanks to this year's warmer weather, trees have blossomed earlier than usual. However, the number of people coming out to enjoy the season has fallen sharply due to the coronavirus pandemic. Some sakura festivals around the capital were also canceled.
In the heart of one of the oldest districts in the U.S. state of California, there is a historical little printing house that is receiving a new lease on life. The building and its equipment were slowly dying out, and its machines were good for scrap. The iconic printing house was on the verge of bankruptcy until a group of artists revived this beacon of traditional typography. They used what was already present in the building, including the tools and hand printing knowledge. Artists are able to print their new age designs using these old printing methods. Some of the machines date back to the late 1800s. La Linterna was first founded to print newspapers. Later on, it began printing cinema and concert posters for famous artists.
IRIB English Radio.